One ticket, please. Lord have mercy, everybody's here. Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah, she's at home. Yeah, she's at home. Yeah, she's at home.
Let the music play. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday, that's Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, before we move forward, Gary from Sussex has been waiting. Hey, Gary, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
This is a new subject. I hope it's okay. What did you think about what Eric Adams said last week about that he thought that the Supreme Court ruling in 1962 of removing prayer from school was absolutely wrong to do that, and that the ACLU and all these atheist groups are telling him that he has to backtrack, and he says absolutely not. You take prayer out of schools, and then you bring guns to schools. And so what's your opinion
Let me do it quickly. Number one, the ACLU was right because the United States is not one religion. It's people of all religions and even people who don't have religious beliefs. Everybody is entitled in this country to their own belief. So why should I or anybody else who disagrees with somebody's religion and our children be forced into that by a segment of the population? We are free in this country to either accept religious beliefs or not. Why should somebody force that on people, on children?
Gary, let me ask you a question. If the prayer that was being given was to Allah, and it was being given and in portions of it in Arabic to be properly respectful to Allah, what would you think of that?
My personal opinion is I don't think they should take prayer. First of all,
well,
God
no. I mean, no. You asked a question, and I before we answer it, I'd like to understand. Because you think that taking prayers, you suggested, I think you agreed with Adams, and that taking prayers out of school would bring guns to school, and that it was a terrible mistake.
No, this is what Eric Adams said.
I know why, but were you not agreeing with that? I didn't. Then what's your phone call about if you aren't agreeing with that?
No. I think my opinion is this. When I was actually in high school, we had prayer meetings in school. And I think that you should be able to go to school, have your own little groups of Arabic or Hinduism or Christianity, and I don't think that they should frown on that.
Nowadays. Gary, I don't think that case forbid private meeting groups, clubs within the school of anything. You could have that today under the Supreme Court ruling. What they didn't want to permit is a prayer over the, for instance, over the PA system in the morning to open the class, or to have a teacher open a class with a prayer, or to administer prayers through the formal mechanism of the school.
And just a Christian prayer.
Yeah.
I mean, when there are people from all different backgrounds in the classrooms, why would you say that people who are not Christian then should be exposed to Christian prayers?
I mean, the point is that many of the pioneers who came to, many of the pilgrims who came to the United States came because they didn't want
religious persecution.
They didn't want to be a member of the Church of England or the Catholic Church or the church that was required by the state or imposed on them in all those circumstances. So, we don't need to talk about this very long, but I think this U.S. Supreme Court was dead right about not allowing religion in a formal sense in public situations, because we want to carefully guard what the pilgrims came to this country to guard, which is absolute freedom of thought and religion and, freedom of religion to exercise whatever form of religion.
Pledge of Allegiance, when the kids would say the Pledge of Allegiance, it's one nation under God. So what is wrong with that? I mean, is that illegal to do in the United States now?
Gary, you if you say one nation under God, you can say that, but you have to practice it. Okay? You have to exhibit that. And you can't say one nation under God and then we only have Christian prayer.
Well, and for that matter, the Pledge of Allegiance, you understand, was not is not the founding fathers. The Pledge of Allegiance originated in the 20th century, I believe, and it's not fundamental to anything other than a practice. It's a practice that's been initiated. It's not any sort of government right that's required. So, you know, I just think, you know, I don't understand where you're coming from on this anymore, Gary, but I think that our country is founded on fundamental religious freedom, and it's a very, very slippery slope when you start introducing religion into a government process.
But, Sandy, this is coming. Gary is not alone.
No, I understand.
There's a segment of this population that is pushing this, and unfortunately, it just happens to be on a Republican side of things, and I don't understand why all of a sudden we must push this and make it clear that we're a Christian nation. Where is that written?
Well, you know, there's all this dispute because the founding fathers tended to talk about God. The fact is that was a practice in the time of their time, and so who knows? But what is clear from the law, you know, from the Constitution, is that the freedom of religion is fundamental, and it was fundamental to the pilgrims that came, and it was fundamental in the 18th century that there was this dichotomy in the world between countries that imposed religions and those that did not. And so in America, we set our feet down firmly in the direction of being a place where religion was not to be imposed upon us in any fashion.
And I would like to ask you, Gary, before we let you go, what are your thoughts after what Sandy and I just have said to you? Were you aware of that? Do you think that what he said and what I said has any impact at all on your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it does. I think that our country would be way better off if we were practicing Christianity more in
schools.
Ask me a question. You're going to cut me off. I know you do this all the time. You cut me off. But let me just get what I'm saying. I think, like Sandy said, we're going down a slippery slope, but I'm looking at slippery slope in a different way than Sandy is. I think that the morals in this country have gone down so far. I mean, it's just disgusting.
Gary,
the line has been crossed so far, you don't even know where the line came from.
Should we allow everybody's opinion on how it should be? Is that what it should be? Or is it the way, as Sandy stated earlier, what the nation stands for? And it doesn't stand for what everybody else thinks it should be. It is a nation that allows religious freedoms. That's what makes the nation part of what makes it what it is.
But this is America right here. Do you think that everybody in this country should start learning different languages just because there's 100 different countries here? No, this is America. We speak English in this country. I'm just telling you.
All sorts of languages, Gary.
Well, I mean, people in the world generally, you know, speak multiple languages, but the only mono-language country in the world where people only know one language fundamentally is America. And it's because we're lucky enough to, I guess, live between the Atlantic and the Pacific and to be many miles away from, other than the Spanish language in Mexico, which now, of course, you understand is spoken by a substantial number of Americans, at least as one of their languages. So, you know, you want to hang on to a culture, and I suspect it's because you don't like where the present is, and you want to revert to something that was. But I'm not sure that what was that much better. If you go back to 1950, Gary, there were a lot of people in America who were being treated very, very badly, and it was a terrible stain on America, the way we were treating a substantial number of people in America in 1950. But we were a very white culture at that point, and we were much more of a monoculture in terms of what we were like. We were like the Ozzie and Harriet show on TV. But, you know, that's not the reality of America today. And so, you know, I just think that this tendency to want to follow nostalgia back to where it was and try and make things the way they were, and then to seize upon, for instance, the language that we speak or Christianity. If Christianity does not have a monopoly on morality, and there are plenty of other philosophical approaches to life other than Christianity that involve very substantial levels of high moral conduct. And so I think it's totally inappropriate to marry Christianity to the notion that if we had more Christianity, we'd have more
righteousness.
Morality.
You know, yeah. Come on. So, but see, Sandy, Gary and what he's exhibiting is many others like him. And right now we're at this point in the society where they are basically forcing this view and their feelings on the rest of the society. And to me, you don't have a right to that.
Well, I mean, you know, I just think we have to understand why. So I think people who don't like where we are today and are afraid of the direction we're going frequently want to go backwards in time.
Yeah, but we're not going backwards.
I understand. I understand. But I'm trying to be empathetic here and to understand and to say, okay, I understand, Gary, that we want to get back to what we were like, but we can't get back. We got to go forward, and we also have to, I think we're misjudging the notion that it was, for instance, a prevalence of Christianity that caused our society to be what it was like in 1950, or for instance, 1920.
You know, Sandy, you penalize other Americans with that view, right? I mean, you really do, and which you have no right to, because we're all Americans. We're all equal. And people can't talk about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and what that meant and then trample on it, with their views. Thank you very much for the call, Gary. I appreciate it. Got to go to a break. Sandy Williams. It's Monday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Jim from Appleton. Good morning to you, Jim. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just, on this religion thing, they all say Christianity like it's a monolithic kind of thing. It's not. There are many divisions in the Christian church. The biggest one is Catholic and Protestant.
Yes.
And from there you get into Lutherans and Methodists and Pentecostals and Presbyterians. They all say Christian, but it's... they're all talking about their own brand.
Yeah, denominations, and the same thing with Islam. They've got all different denominations, many religions. But anyway, you say what, sir?
Well, you can't say it's a Christian nation when we got 35-40% of the population is now Muslim.
I don't think it's Muslim that we're at. Just to get facts straight, I think that the Muslim the percentage of people who worship Islam in this country is probably very small. It's probably as small as the Jewish faith that is not Christian. I think Jews are in the 5% range, and I suspect that Islam is at 5 or less. But there are plenty of people who worship no religion. There are also Sikhs who, and there are Hindus and Buddhists and all of these people. And I would say that, that Christianity doesn't have a corner on morality in terms of sort of the moral conduct. And I think they're probably any one of those faiths and people of no faith all exhibit, I think, probably this on a percentage basis, the same degree of morality as do Christians.
And the dangerous part of it all is that you somehow elevate one religion above the rest when all of these people are Americans, right? I mean, all of these people, especially the ones who, you know, are born in this country, and even the ones who Sandy have, you know, become American citizens,
yeah,
they're entitled in this country to their own beliefs.
Jim, I don't know how, I don't know what vintage you are, but I went to grade school in the 50s, and we had absolutely no religion in our school. We didn't have prayers. I think we had the Pledge of Allegiance periodically. That was done maybe at the beginning of assemblies. I don't remember when we might have done that, but I don't remember any connection between religion and the public schools that I went to. And I'm talking now about that time for which I think Gary was nostalgic about, the 50s and 60s,
right,
which were, you know, you look back and that was what many people look back at now as being the vintage America we want to return to. Jim, was that your experience? Did you go to public school?
Yes, I went to public school. I was in grade school in the 60s.
And did you have
religion? There was a Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you didn't have prayers, did you?
I can remember when they introduced, I can remember when they introduced One Nation Under God. It used to just be One Nation, yeah, Indivisible.
Right, yeah, Under God.
With liberty and justice for all.
Right.
Under God was added in the late 50s, early 60s.
Right, right. So, and you know, the people...
Under the McCarthy's Red Scare.
Right, and people in America think of the pledge as being something that George Washington said, and I'll have to Google it, but my recollection is the Pledge of Allegiance is quite a modern invention, actually.
Which has no religious...
My recollection of the pledge was it came in around the Civil War.
So, but it had no religious affiliation or connotation to it. So there are people who somehow tie that in to some kind of religious beliefs. It does not have that.
No, right. Right.
Well, yeah, the religious belief part came in definitely during McCarthyism and the Red Scare.
Actually, I suspect that the part of religions that has a fear of idolatry would be concerned about a Pledge of Allegiance to a flag,
yes,
to a flag of the
no,
United States, but that's getting philosophical.
Yeah, but you know, again, and I think there's no question that Christianity is the predominant religion in this country. It has been. It has been since the country's inception in... You know, and it's getting smaller, not because of Sandy and Jim. It's getting smaller, not because the other religions are growing. It's because there are less and less people practicing religion in this country.
I can go along with that one.
Well, hey Jim, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. So, you know, Sandy, we don't talk about religion much on the show. And clearly, when as Gary called and brought that subject up, we don't have any problem having the discussion. But what we do think, and Sandy, and you're big on this, you want to make sure that when we have conversations and what's being said is correct, right?
Yeah. In fact, I just did Google the Pledge of Allegiance. It was written originally in 1892, but it didn't start getting recited at things immediately at that point. It was in the 20th century when it began to be used on a regular basis, And so, and Under God was introduced in 1954, as was just pointed out, during the McCarthy period.
All right, listen, we got to go to a break. We'll come back to you on the phone lines after the break. It's I was going to say it's Friday, but it's Monday. It's Monday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Dave from Mequon. You say what, my friend?
Good morning, Earl. I just want to follow up really quickly with some numbers. So actually, the Jewish population in the United States is approximately like 2.4% of the population. Uh-huh. And out of that percentage, there's a good chunk they're actually not actually practicing Jews, which is another discussion. But that being said, I don't have a problem with parents putting their kids in religious school. But as far as the point of, you know, teaching Christianity in public schools, no. I went to both public and private schools. Growing up as a kid, I went to university school for quite a long time, and then I went to public school for a few years, and then I'm to Minnesota in Nicolet for my education. And what I noticed is that, yes, we have a lot of diversity, and I could not imagine, you know, hypothetically, let's say Judaism was the primary religion in the United States, that would be, let's say, it made up, let's say, like 35%, hypothetically, and all of a sudden we're preaching that in public schools. Well, you still have, you know, 70-some-odd% or 65% that are not of that religion. And in Christianity, it has grown smaller. I understand where Gary is coming from with the standpoint of more people should try to practice to be nice to one another and try to take God into their lives. I do believe that.
But that's
that.
Just not a Christian principle, David.
Right, that's correct. And so that was my next thing that I was going to go with. And everybody has different versions of it. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I wasn't, you know, could I choose to be Jewish? No, I don't have to be Jewish. I could, you know, switch over to Christianity if I wanted to. And there's a lot of things that I think have to be recognized with that's a slippery slope when you start, you know, enforcing one set of values over everybody else as far as a religious aspect of things.
Well, Gary, your Jewish heritage, you know, 1490. Your Jewish heritage, you know, 1492, the Inquisition in Spain was the imposition of a Catholic thought process that, basically ferreting out secret Jews, right? Jews have suffered, and many religions, you know, the pilgrims who came to this country suffered because they wanted to practice Protestantism, you know,
Just to be clear, Sandy, one thing I'll just make really clear, which was very unusual at the time. My grandparents, actually on my mom's side, they were all Jewish. My dad's side, that was not the case. My grandmother was actually Catholic, and she was older than my grandfather. So I actually kind of saw both sides as growing up as a kid, because my grandmother never technically converted from Catholicism to Judaism. So I had a pretty good understanding between, you know, the differences between the two religions as I was growing up, because we had that, and it worked for my grandfather and my grandmother, but that was very unusual.
Yeah, but David,
and I will say that
the bottom line is this is America, and we've got to keep that separated. You know.
Yes.
And I don't care. You know, people have fought wars, and so to somehow think that we need to have one predominant religion is not going to happen. It should never happen under any circumstances.
But the one thing I would say is this. I don't think there's any harm of teaching different parts of religion to different people either. I think people should be encouraged to understand other religions and what they're about.
And I think that comparative religion is a course that is taught in public schools in some places, and it's taught in universities, and that's different. Because comparative religions is really historical cultural analysis of differences between religions. It's not the instruction in a religion. And so, you know, I suspect you went to university school. I don't think there was religion taught at university school either. And that's a private school, which could have done it. But so anyway, I think we're preaching to the choir here. We're in agreement, and I think everyone's in agreement that we need more goodness in the country. I just don't think that the only font of goodness is Christianity.
All right, David, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, I wanted to go here. German Chancellor warns of consequences if China sends arms to Russia. Joe Biden and America has done a really good job of priming NATO and bringing them all on board to send a message to China. I mean, to say there are going to be consequences, the German chancellor to China, and the consequences, so people don't look at it as a military thing. It's the fact that Germany is one of the top trading partners.
Yeah, Germany is one of the top trading partners with China, and these consequences we talk about are economic consequences, and which
are a big deal.
Would be a big deal, and quite frankly, they probably would have similar kind of bilateral damage to the countries imposing the sanctions as well as the country receiving the sanctions, much the way the oil and gas sanctions on Russia had bilateral effects.
But I found out there's only 20% of the nations that agree with the sanctions on Russia.
Yes, I mean, they're
so not enough to really shut them down.
No, they aren't shut down, although the oil and gas sales to Europe have gone way down. But my point is that the imposition of the sanctions would be painful on both sides, and it would be further destructive of the global economy. And the more we balkanize the world economy, I'm afraid the more we balkanize ourselves from a social standpoint as well, and create more probability of friction and warfare. One of the reasons I think we've always been relatively comfortable that we wouldn't go to war with China is the fact that China's hugely integrated into the world economy, and the notion that we would separate China from the world economy and put them into an isolated state would only make them a more dangerous possibility in the world rather than a less dangerous one. So it's kind of it's much the same as when isolating Iran. When we isolate Iran entirely, we create more probability of problems than if they were fully integrated into the world economy and became dependent on the world economy for the prosperity that they became used to. So with respect to, however, the notion that NATO is pretty unified, you know, I think part of this process of talking to China like this is to persuade China to slow down on that process and to help get Russia to the negotiating table. I think China is complicit in this, quite frankly. I think China wants them to get to the negotiating table. They don't really want to rattle this cage either.
I heard yesterday, I think it was on Meet the Press, a Democratic senator, and I forgot his name, and he had the nerve on a television show that seen globally to say, well, we want to continue to help Ukraine because they are depleting Russia's military, and they're doing that for us. He said that on television.
Oh, I know, and I fear that that's my
fear. Come on, Sandy.
My fear is that that really is our policy.
Yeah, but that
this proxy war, you know, this thing that Russia calls a proxy war, we deny it's a proxy war, is a proxy war. And Biden has said this in the beginning. He talked about how we were going to weaken Russia, how we might get rid of Putin. You know, we say these things, and they aren't gaffes, I'm afraid. I'm afraid they are a policy. And we should understand that these things are very much then an existential threat to Russia. I mean, they are verbalizations of an existential threat to Russia. And do we really want to do this? Because as I keep saying, let's say we get our wish. Let's say we weaken Russia to the point of being extremely weak. They still have a nuclear arsenal, which is all they have to fall back upon, and makes it more likely that nuclear weapons get used to defend themselves existentially.
That's the whole purpose of
having
it. It's the last resort.
Yes, it's the whole purpose of having nuclear weapons is to defend against existential problems. And then the notion that we want to get rid of Putin suggests that we think there's someone that would be better than Putin that would step into the vacuum that would be created when, like I said last week, Evgeny Prigozhin currently looks like the most likely guy. He is not better than Putin. I mean, Putin's not a good guy. I'm not defending Putin. I'm just saying there's a stable of people who could be worse.
I couldn't understand how the senator could make that statement and the guy, or I don't know if it was on Fox or if it was on Meet the Press, but whether it was the moderator did not ask him to explain what he meant by saying, well, the longer we can make this happen, the more we'll deplete Russia. And I mean, if you felt that way, Sandy, wouldn't you keep that?
Well, and your point is also that saying that suggests that we don't really want Ukraine to settle because we want them to continue to deplete Russia's resources, even though it's costing Ukraine tens of thousands of lives. We're arming them to the teeth, like I said, so they can defend themselves and deplete Russia down to the last Ukrainian.
That to me, is unconscionable.
It's unconscionable to the Ukrainians as well.
Yeah. CJ, all right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Earl and Sandy. You know, I was wondering, Sandy, and you watched Merrick Garland's testimony, and speaking of religion in the Northeast, it was proven that there was a flyer put out. Not only are they targeting parents at school board meetings, now they're targeting Catholic by Jewish FBI agents. It was a written letter. And did you watch his testimony on C-SPAN?
My answer is no, I did not. I've seen snippets of his testimony, but the they that you're talking about, that I don't know.
I mean, CJ, that's the kind of thing when you make those kind of statements that, you know, they're targeting Catholics.
No, well, it went further than that. He said that they were targeting the Jewish FBI agents were targeting Catholics.
Well,
now we got it going.
Yeah, I mean, CJ, can't you see what that means?
Well, you guys seem to not want to even acknowledge that our greatest institutions are being politicized, and you deny it.
CJ,
to the point that this president's going to get us into a nuclear war. You denied the fact that he was weak with Putin.
Okay,
you denied
so
the fact.
I don't want to go over that again.
China.
What I do want to say, CJ, is when you want to talk about things being politicized, Republicans have been politicizing the FBI. You don't say anything about that, do you?
Was Republican or Democrat? You did, Earl, not me.
What?
You're the one that said Republican or Democrat. I didn't say that. I said our greatest institutions are being politicized.
By whom?
Whether
by
right or left.
Okay.
You need to watch more than just MSNBC, Earl. Please, because watch C-SPAN like I do. You don't get pundits telling you what to believe.
Hey,
and
CJ. Hey, CJ, I make my own decisions on what I believe. And I don't go by what anybody on C-SPAN or Fox News or MSNBC says. I've got my own mind. I do my own research, and I base my opinions on that. Thank you very much for the call. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
I never take anything for granted. Only a fool maybe takes things for granted. Just because it's here today, it can be gone tomorrow.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, we've been all over the map with today's show, but I will say to you, we're going to keep on talking about China. We're going to keep on talking about Ukraine. Sandy, we're getting mighty close to a couple of things, and that's Ukraine Russia running out of ammunition, supposedly. Ukraine is saying they're running out of ammunition. The spring offensives are right around the corner. What's going to happen?
Well, you know, the whole Ukrainian issue is it's a tragedy. You know, the running out of ammunition
is the least of.
Well, it tells you they've been shooting a lot of it, and they've been hitting. You know, I don't know what percentage of ammunition hits somebody. Not a very high percentage, but they're
on either side.
Tens of thousands of deaths on both sides, military losses and civilian losses, a country's infrastructure reduced to rubble. The notion that it would be a proxy war to deplete Russia's resources, that we would use Ukraine to that extent, I my hope is that that's not our foreign policy. But I do think, and one of the reasons I want to focus on China and Ukraine in discussion is that we need, the American public needs to wake up and get involved in our foreign policy, figure out where we belong, what our critical interests are, how much we should be spending on foreign policy. You know, we're talking about China increasing their expenditures on defense, and we're acting nervous about that. With their increases in defense, they still are a fraction of what we spend. The fact that both these places have significant armies and significant navies tells me that they get a lot more bang for their buck that they spend on military than we do, because we spend a ginormous amount. We're cutting out our social gut, essentially, by making it impossible for ourselves to have the social programs that our Tom, Dick, and Mary need because of our military expenditures and because, I think, of our miscalculation of what it is that's critical to the United States and the extent to which we need to honor the regional interests of other great powers in the country. We aren't the only great power in the world anymore, and we don't really, it's not smart for us, and we don't have any right to assert hegemony over the world. And we will find out that if we continue to do this, we will suffer greatly.
Let's bring in Stephen from Green Bay quickly. Thank you very much for the call, Stephen. You say what?
Hey, Earl. I don't usually make a habit of doing this, but I got to say something. CJ just called in. I heard what he said, and I'm a little fired up because in the middle of you guys talking about Ukraine being used as props, people losing their lives, whole cities being decimated, he calls in and tries to completely change the subject and talk about Jewish FBI agents and Catholics, just to totally divert from the subject, and then has the nerve to challenge what you're watching when just last week he called in on this network and was trying to defend Fox News that is currently being sued It's ridiculous. I guess the question I'd have for him is, do you not have any humanity that you can't stay on the topic of people being used as props in their own country? It's just absolutely disgusting to me, Earl. And this is one of the things that's wrong with the right is whenever they get challenged on their views, they just completely change the subject to something else.
Stephen, can't say I disagree with you. You're 100% correct, and hopefully, CJ is listening to that because you're 100% accurate in what you just said. Thank you very much for the call, Sandy.
Well, you know, that's right. It's the deflection with a shiny object. We're talking about one thing, and let's talk about social issues. Let's talk about who can use what bathroom. You know, the things, you know, there are fundamentally important things that we need to at least stay on the topic long enough to have a conversation about and to reach an understanding about so that we can start not blundering around the world, quite frankly. You know, our world of foreign affairs, our history of foreign affairs has been one huge blunder after another for quite a long time, and yet we never seem to have a lessons learned analysis that causes us to, as a public, step in and say, wait a minute, let's think this over. What are we doing here and why? So, you know, and in terms of one quick thing I wanted to mention, I saw in the paper yesterday, I think, that Daniel Ellsberg came out with a press release saying he's in hospice care, he's going to die, he's 91. And I just think that it's interesting. Daniel Ellsberg, we lived through it, the Pentagon Papers, the release of that, the attack on Daniel Ellsberg as a non-patriot, as the enemy of the state, essentially.
Right, traitor.
And traitor. And then 10 years later, 15 years later, we look back, and he's essentially now viewed as sort of a hero, someone who revealed to all of us what it was that was going on behind the scenes about Vietnam. And he revealed to us, essentially, the lies and the hypocrisy that the government was involved in at the time. And so, you know, we constantly attack the people who are not not towing the line on our foreign policy when it's happening. You know, Mr. Snowden, some of the people who've revealed things recently are under direct assault, and yet they did reveal, you know, the NASA interception of millions of phone calls in the United States was alarming to both the right and the left, and yet we attack the person who gave the message to us. So I just think that hats off to Ellsberg, actually, and the bravery that he exhibited back then. And I think we should recognize the importance of dissidents in this country. People need to speak up and speak out about what it is our country might be doing, because the fact is we are fully capable of making very grand mistakes, and we have made them. We can point at Iraq, we can point at Vietnam, we can point at 20 years in Afghanistan. We can point at lots of things where nothing good came of it, and a huge expense in blood and treasure of the United States was expended. And yet we don't seem to get a lessons learned from it.
You know, I think it's more than well said, Sandy. We've certainly need to take a look back at what happened and what transpired, as always. Thank you. We got to get out of here, Sandy. Time flies. Be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later. The way I believe in you. Yeah. I said I love you. That's forever. This I promise from my heart. Oh, Lord. I could not love you any better, yeah. I love you just the way you are.